I'm Paula, Bill Russell, Elizabeth Marshall Thomas. When I first came upon you, and over the course of years, you answered probably the biggest question of my entire life. What is a human, and how do we fit into all of the natural world from which we are so radically divorced, and into which we have the opportunity to return, should we choose? Not the same as the Bushman of whom you speak. Bill, you had something you wanted to say about this whole experience of nature and being apart from, and back into.
I'm looking out the window, and I remember an evening. It actually got very dark, and dark in the woods in New Hampshire is pretty dark.
Yes.
And you and Paula were talking about something, and she asked you, I think, about afterlife. And I expected you to say, nah, that's, you know, once you're gone, you're gone. And you said, oh, no, no, I believe in an afterlife. And then you said something that is compatible with what you're going to tell me now about your afterlife.
And that you so willingly share in the autobiography.
It's that. This is a wonderful question, and people are shocked at the answer, but I do believe in an afterlife, and I know that I'm going to have one, but it will not be of the body. It will not be of the mind or the spirit or anything like that. It will be of the body.
That is because
we are made of particles. The particles that make us up appeared right after the Big Bang. Same particles, still there, changing, occupying different forms and shapes, of course, as time goes by. But I may have particles that were in a dinosaur. I like to think I do. Maybe blue-green algae. That would be nice. Maybe some bad person that I wouldn't like to have, but you can't choose. So, What will happen to me is, of course, my ashes will be tossed at the edge of the field, and at that point, my molecules will go up into the grass. A deer may eat the grass. A mountain lion might eat the deer, and I like to think that I could spend part of time, part of eternity, as part of a molecule in a mountain lion. That would be very nice. I've always wanted to shape change into a cat.
Well, and you figured out how to do it.
I figured out how to do it.
This takes vast time and puts it into perspective. If one can think of oneself as an aggregation of molecules that have been around one way or another in ways we can't even begin to imagine over what is millennia upon a millennia upon a millennia.
It's 13.6 billion, yeah. but it took the stars a little while to create some of this stuff.
Yeah.
So.
There is a humility. And there's also a celebration in thinking about the big and the small of that. Is that also how one goes about an autobiography?
Well, that's a thought. Yes, it is. I'm good for you.
that's so
smart. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Is there more to be said about that? I mean, it is just daunting to me to think of all you've done in all the places, in all the ways, with the family you've had, and your parents and your husband and your children who have stories all their own that are very interesting in the autobiography. Read the autobiography. It's just hard to think how in the world does one understand the particulars and the whole and make sense of it all.
I think it's your unconscious mind that's doing that. It's certainly not your rational mind.
Is this one of, like Faulkner says, writers write?
Yeah.
Is that one of those heady...
Yes.
Is that what you do? You come and sit down and let the unconscious loose that day?
I come in and wait and see what happens. And if it doesn't work, then I just write something, and pretty soon it gets going and goes.
One can begin to see many of the stories that humans have told ourselves over the millennia about the muses, about the gods, about inspiration. Mm-hmm. All those things, I hear a truth ringing through as you speak of this.
That's good to hear.
when you go back to the Kalahari and the Bushmen, did you hear that kind of stories from them I want to really end in this whole subject of storytelling, whether you're talking about the old way or Reindeer Moon, or talking about your family origin and those with whom you now live. This storytelling function has served you well on many levels, hasn't it?
Oh, I think so, yes. And as for the hunter-gatherers, they certainly told stories. The stories had a... don't know very much about mythology, but people who do are feeling that these stories have strong cultural significance. They may be, to a Western ear, it may be hard to understand, but not... And very interesting concepts come out in these stories. And so, yeah, and this is how people kind of learn their larger cultural setting in many ways. In important ways, I wouldn't say, not always, and not even many, but in very important ways.
I'm thinking of that, and I'm thinking of you and the stars, and you and the tiger's belly,
or the belly of the tiger,
the belly of the beast. These stories are representations of reality, whether they're fiction or nonfiction. You've done both, but they are representations. They're not reality. Mm-hmm. They are representations of reality and different ways of looking at it. Which is essentially what the same thing you're saying about your molecules. You know, these are molecules that get represented this time, sometimes animately, sometimes inanimately. But I'm struck by the parallel of that and the consistency of that, the coherence of that.
That's wonderful.
Thank you, Liz.
I guess you're a good writer.
You got my attention.
You talk about the Bushman as a part of timelessness. The timelessness of the era in which they lived, as if they're not stuck with stopwatches and watches and clocks. And there is, it seems to me, something profound to be learned about the human experience as represented before agriculture started cutting us into small pieces, about embracing the timeless, being part of the timeless, of honoring of a certain transcendence, if you will. Is that in the conscious of these people, or is it so deeply embedded, this timelessness, that it infects or affects most everything?
That is, in ways, a hard question to answer. But what I would say is that the timelessness is just there, and the reason for the relative timelessness is that. There are only certain ways to live by hunting and gathering. You don't have a wide variety of stuff. You have to pay attention. You have to know your environment very well. You don't need a lot of things because you have the things you use there, they are right in front of you. They're all around you. And some of the things I was mentioning about the similarity between AA and these groups, everybody's survival depends on belonging to a group, depends on cooperation and so forth like that. And I think that we carry sort of ancient memories, things that we kind of evolved, that helped us evolve and helped us survive. I think we carry many of these memories unconsciously. And that's why certain things feel good to us and certain things feel right to us.
Tell me again the name of the autobiography, which is also a memoir, I guess, and tell me why you call it that.
Oh, and the title is A Million Years With You. And the reason for that is that my dad was fascinated with trees. And we were looking out the window and we were looking at the Wapak Range, which is right out the window. And he was saying, we were talking about how long ago the glaciers made those mountains. And then before that, what the climate was like and that kind of thing. And looking way, way back in time. And he said, and we were talking, he and I used to hike on these mountains. I mean, when my brother and I were little, he took us up those mountains frequently. And that's where we learned about the woods and how not to get lost and all that kind of thing. And how to build a fire with one match, even if it's raining. He made us do that until we could do it every time, okay? And then, so we were, in the light of all that, we were talking about the antiquity of it. And he said, I'd like to live a million years with you. And then he said, you know, maybe we've already done that in the form of the dinosaur atoms and so forth. So that was very important to me. That was, I was a grown-up then, very much, I must have been 40 at that point. And it was not very long before his death. But
well, Elizabeth Marshall Thomas, I'd like to live a million years with you too. So thank you for letting us share some of them.
Oh,
and read the book, write the book, read the book, and you keep writing. We keep waiting for more and more.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Bill and I have had many wonderful experiences producing this program over the years. A singular high point has been the friendship we've shared with Liz Thomas and her equally remarkable husband, Steve Thomas. Some gifts are too precious to capture in words, so we simply say thank you. I'm Paula Gordon. I wish you well.